straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first on Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 317, brought to you by Hook'em.com, our good friends at Bud Light. Cedric Golden here with the Duck, Kirk Bowles. And Duck, it's the final countdown. The Texas Longhorns will play their final Big 12 home game on Friday against Texas Tech. And when it's such a momentous occasion with everything that's on the line, CFP, Big 12 title game, we need to bring in a big dog. Fozzie Whitaker joins us. You can see him on Longhorn Network. I don't know how long that's going to last. We'll get into that later. And you can also hear him on Sirius Big 12 Radio. Fozzie, what's up, man?
What is going on, fellas? I appreciate the opportunity having me on. It's a bittersweet moment just from what you talked about. You laid it out. The last game in the Big 12 in the regular season for Texas. Same way with Longhorn Network, man. I've been a part of Longhorn Network since 2019. My senior year was the first year Longhorn Network became Longhorn Network in 2011. And so seeing the growth over the past decade plus years and then seeing the final game in DKR for the Longhorns, a part of the Big 12, the final game of Longhorn Network being a part of that industry as well. It's a bittersweet moment, but man, it's a momentous one, like you mentioned, and one that I'm truly happy for this team being in this position, happy for Sark being in this position. And man, this team, man, they deserve it all, and just happy for the progress that they've been able to make.
So you're saying emotions are going to be running high this Friday night at the DKR.
This is senior day for you, Fozzie, again.
Absolutely. That's emotions will be high. I don't expect to cry. I didn't even cry on my own senior day, and I didn't even get to play. But it definitely is one where emotions will be shared. I'm sure people, especially on the Longhorn Network set, they will shed a few tears. It's been so much energy put into that industry, put into that program, the game day atmosphere, doing the pregame show, halftime, postgame show, the amount of coverage that they do in during the week, going to practice, you know, rewind with Sark, where Lowell's up there with them every single Monday, covering the press conferences. Like, it's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. And so the producers, executive producer Andy Wall, Jordan
best.
Cannon, producer, yeah, Andres Alvarez, the other producer, they've all done a phenomenal job and have really helped guide me along my media career and helped me get into a position now where I can continue to be on TV and opened up avenues on SiriusXM for me to do the broadcast on the radio. So I owe a lot to Longhorn Network, and the emotions will run rampant for sure.
You know, you mentioned Andy Wall, and she's the absolute best. And she's been there since the start. She worked for us for a minute.
Yeah.
Classed up a Statesman for a year or so on a freelance basis. And you mentioned Lowell Galindo. My guy, Alex Loeb, is one of the best guys in the business. And then you got yourself. You got Michael Griffin, who I consider a good friend. Brian Robinson. The best people that we've been around in the program are on Longhorn Network. And it was just cool to see you guys. We knew you before you were grown-ass men, and now you're grown-ass men with kids and doing a great job. And your future's bright, Fozzie. I don't know where you're going to end up, but it's going to be something national. You already got your Sirius radio thing going, but I can see you in a TV booth somewhere because you just got the look, you got the knowledge, and people love them some Fozzie Whitaker. They just do.
I appreciate that. Well, I appreciate that. That's what this team is bringing right now. They got that it factor. So I'm just trying to keep up with what the team is doing currently, honestly.
and last week, boy, they ever have the it factor. You know, one of the most impressive, grittiest games I can remember by a Longhorn team with so much against them, you know, on the road, night game, touchdowns called back by penalty. They're fumbling at the nine. Yeah, the refs. But, I mean, what stood out to you about the team last week at Ames, Fozzie?
Well, you mentioned it. I'll reflect back, and I thought about the moment that they got to share. And you can see post-game the level of excitement that Steve Sarkisian had whenever he led, the Longhorn team singing the Texas fight song in the eyes of Texas, the celebration in the locker room, obviously the quotes. We had Jay Witt on the Longhorn Network in the post-game interview. And he talked about, you know, mentioning his progress from whenever he was year one with Sark and where he is now, the progress of the team, and then obviously the five-star culture going along with the five-star talent. And it takes me back to 2021, man. It was the two-year anniversary that Bo Davis had to get off the bus speech. That speech resonated with so many people and so many individuals because it was truly a highlight moment where the coaches were fed up with the mediocrity that Texas had put on display for the past number of years. A lot of the players, especially the leaders in that time, they were fed up with the mediocrity, basically had to clean house with the ones that weren't in the battle looking to achieve the same goals that Sark was looking to achieve and build that foundational piece, had to get rid of some of those people. And man, that coming full circle moment 2 years later, where Texas has the opportunity to go on a revenge tour, embrace the hate tour, right? The TCUs that had beaten Texas in the past, the Kansas States that had beaten Texas in the past, the Iowa States beaten Texas in the past, right? And then you just keep getting those opportunities. They got another opportunity. Texas Tech, who derailed their season last year, got an opportunity to get that hate back into it and get that revenge tour happening. So it's kind of a little bit of a poetic justice whenever you talk about the full circle moments from whenever Sark first came, that 5-7 season, to get off the bus speech by Bo Davis. And then all eyes are on Texas right now as they have a tremendous opportunity to continue to showcase what this season has been, continue to showcase the culture that Sark talked about in his press conference on Monday, and continue to be the team that we know that they can be and kind of are destined for right now, as they've been playing well above the standards of what people have thought and playing to a level where we believe Texas football should be at.
And poetic justice is the perfect term. Give me some Janet Jackson and Tupac on a mail truck all day long. I'm going to tell you, man, I was in Iowa, and the duck was, he let me go to Iowa. I mean, that's I got the Iowa trip, and we were on the other side of that locker room, Fozzie, waiting on Sark, and they're in there rapping Boosie. And they are on fire in there. And Sark comes in and he's trying to be all business, but he had this little smile on his face. He knows he's got the best team in the Big 12. It's his job to make sure they play that way. But they're the most talented team since 09 on both sides of the ball. Weapon. Mm-hmm. Now, one of those weapons, Jonathan Brooks, tore his ACL on November 11th. November 12th of 2011, almost 12 years to the day.
Yeah.
For yours. At Missouri on that horrible rug, awful rug at Farrow Field. You and Henry Josie both went down on the same.
Yeah.
The two best players on the field. When Jonathan tore his, did you hearken back, reflect back? Because that was the end of your college football career. And did you think about the day that it all came to an end and the emotions that were going through your head?
I did reflect back, and that's a situation for JB that, man, he has such a bright future, and he still has a bright future, don't get me wrong, but the season that he was having was one that was nothing short of great. And everybody talked about how the Texas running backs were going to replace the production of what Bijan Robinson and Roschon Johnson had, and not just from a standpoint of the accolades and actual on-field production, but also the leadership that those guys left behind. And you see a guy that was extremely unselfish, right? Jonathan Brooks been here for 3 seasons, and he had to sit behind those two guys for 2 years. And it was like, when is it going to be my shot? And then you get an opportunity where those guys both are playing on Sundays and having a phenomenal start to their NFL careers. And you automatically thinking, okay, I've been here the longest. I've had success whenever I've gotten the opportunity to come in during those times where they weren't there. Like, this is my time to shine. And then Steve Sarkisian says, we're rolling out the freshman to begin the season with against Rice. And then we're rolling out the freshman to start the season against Alabama as well. And it's like, he's experienced adversity among adversity on top of adversity, losing his father. Like, this dude has not caught a break yet. And all he does is put his head down and work. And it's almost a similar fashion to the same way I've seen the trajectory of where Jordan Whittington's career has gone. Jordan Whittington was also one of those very unselfish people that came in trying to find his role, trying to find his identity, experienced some injuries, couldn't finish a season. Now, all of a sudden, we see him as a main staple and a leader to this team, not just on the offensive side of the ball, but in all phases. Everybody respects him. And that's what Sark also mentioned in the postgame conferences. Nobody probably commands more respect than Jordan Whittington. And I think that's truly an amazing feat that Jordan has been able to do as he's experienced adversity. And I think Jonathan Brooks is right in that same category as somebody that the team looks up to. I know you all were there, or at least you were, Cedric. If you saw Jonathan Brooks on the sideline, one thing that we were able to dive into on the rewind was he had on chains. Yes. And he had on all the chains.
Lots of chains.
And the thing about it was the running back's room. All of their chains was entrusted to Jonathan Brooks.
Man.
And they look at him as a protector. They look at him as somebody to guard not just his own, but to guard that entire room and that entire space. And so for all the running backs to be able to entrust their chains to him, and he embodied that on the sideline with the type of season that he was having, still up as a semifinalist in the Doak Walker Award, goes to show you what he means from a foundational aspect to this team and to this offense. And I think my heart does go out to him, and I hope for a speedy recovery. But this is only the beginning, right? He's gone through so much, but it's still, he's just scratching the surface as the impact that he can continue to have at the University of Texas, being a first year that he's actually playing and then coming back. And I look at a guy like Blake Corum, who's at Michigan right now, had kind of a similar same type of trajectory on the timeline, right? Last year, Michigan doing out of worldly things, beating everybody, blowing everybody out of the water. Obviously, Blake Corum goes down late in the season, and it's a long recovery process. He even could have possibly went into the draft. Yeah. And he comes back, and now here he is again, Doak Walker semifinalist as well, leading the Michigan Wolverines to an undefeated season, getting ready to face one of the biggest games that they've had, and he's just continued to get better and stronger. Well, I can see that same type of progress and process happening for Jonathan Brooks, where he comes back bigger and stronger next year, has a role for himself cut out, and being another Doak Walker semifinalist and leading the Texas Longhorns into an opportunity to play for a CFP again. And so it's opportunities, it's tragedy, it's adversity, it's also love, it's also appreciation. It's so many emotions wrapped up in the season that JB has had. But ultimately, man, what he brings to the table and his foundational piece and his fight to never quit is what stands out to me. And one thing that I'm truly proud of him, the way that he's been able to respond as well. I mean, you see him still week after surgery, he's out here handing out turkeys, right? Doing community service work, right? Full knee brace. Like, he didn't have to do that. He could be at home chilling, resting up, icing up his knee, but he decided that it's bigger than just him. And it's bigger than him feeling sorry for himself at home. He'd rather do something out in the community and still give back to the community that's given in to him. So that's the type of person that Jonathan Brooks is.
He's just phenomenal off the field, on the field. I mean, there hadn't been a drop-off. You lose Bijan and Roshan.
Right.
And the running game is just as good. It's just amazing. And like you spoke to his character, and you've been through that injury. So realistically, as late as this comes in the season, what realistically can Longhorn fans and coaches and JB himself expect for him to come back next year? Is that expecting too much for him to play next year, Fozzie?
I don't think so, but I'm not going to claim and claim to be a doctor, so I'm not quite sure the full extent of his injury. We know it was an ACL, but if he had any other cartilage or ligament damage, that will also be taken into account with his recovery process. From everything that I've gathered, I don't believe that there is any extensive damage outside of obviously the ACL being repaired. And I go back to who I mentioned earlier with Blake Corum. It was kind of the same situation where you're this late in the season in November. He has his injury and the same type of process ended his season that year. And then he comes back and he's ready to rock and roll for that Michigan team. Started off a little bit on a pitch count early on, but he's been healthy. He's seemed healthy. He's playing healthy and he's playing at an elite level right now. And I don't see why Jonathan Brooks wouldn't be able to have or experience a similar type of success with the trajectory that we're at in modern science now. The technology allows us to be in a position where 6 months is not far-fetched for a guy. I mean, we see Aaron Rodgers right now throwing the football, moving around as if he's trying to practice next week. Right? And that's a torn Achilles, which is an even worse injury than what ACL replacement has been now. He's older, right? Aaron Rodgers, 40-plus. Exactly. Right. You got a 20-plus year old now, body still healing at an exceptional rate. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Sarkisian in the off season take it easy. Obviously, spring ball is out of the question. You don't expect him to be doing much there. But by the time summer conditioning rolls around, I wouldn't be surprised to see Jonathan Brooks out there running striders, like opening it up, even doing some cutting a little bit and then non-contact throughout fall camp. And then come around first, second game, I wouldn't be surprised to see him out there on a pitch count in a smaller role and then ramping him up as the season progresses.
Got to ask you this. I watch Longhorn Network. I mean, it's on. I got it on. And the one thing that I love, and all due respect to the OG Mac Brown, I don't know that you and Michael Griffin would be able to work on Longhorn Network if Mac was the coach. Y'all keep it a little bit too real. Y'all are telling truths. And Kirk and I know about truths because we take those daggers every week. If they don't agree with something, we say part of the job. Now, Mike Griff has said it might catch up to him one day. These slow first halves may catch up to him. I saw him say it. I go, all right, Griff. All right, Griff, you're speaking truth. You preach. Is it a concern? I personally think they're going to beat Texas Tech like a redheaded step mule. I think they're going to whoop Tech like they stole something. But is it a concern moving forward in the bowl game or possibly in the CFP, these slow starts, playing to competition that you should be playing better against? Now, CFP, they're going to be playing the competition as good as they are.
Right.
But
right.
Texas Tech, for instance, is that a concern that they might start slow?
You know, there's been concern, but here's where Texas has always answered. And here's one thing that I truly love about Sark. And the reason why we're able to be candid and keep it real on LHN is because of how candid and truthful Coach Sark is. Like, we haven't had a guy talk to the media and in particular talk with us on a real, like, man-to-man level, not from a coach-to-media level, right? He talks to us as if he's almost one of our colleagues or as if he's coaching us in that type of mindset. And this is, like, off-air. And it's the best relationship that I've ever been able to have with a coach that's not on-air and just keeping it real. And I think that's something that this team has fed off of is the authenticity that Coach Sark is always going to be, the culture that he's created. And I know I keep talking about his press conference on Monday, but it truly is a culture that is embodied by what Sark does every single day, how he lives his life out every single day, and how that has spread to his staff. And now that has spread to this Texas team to a point where 10-1 was a long shot for us. But now you see this team believing in something different. And it's because of the culture that was created. And I think ultimately that puts me at ease. This Texas team has started off slow. And then in the second half, they found ways to blow the door wide open. Or they started off fast and then allowed a Kansas State or allowed a TCU to get back into the game. And then all of a sudden, they found a way to get a defensive stop against U of H or get a defensive stop against Kansas State and end the game that way. And it's like this team can do anything that you ask them to do. Okay, you're not happy with the slow starts. Okay, we'll start faster. You're not happy with the way that we'll finish the game. Okay, we'll start finishing the games. Oh, you're not happy with how physical we are? Okay, we'll show you how physical we can be against Iowa State. We'll beat them in their own game. They want to play bully ball? Okay, bet. We'll play bully ball and let our freshman running back go for over 100 yards, right? Mm-hmm. You want to call us out about our culture? Then cool. We're going to show you what our culture is truly about. Tavondre Sweat, Byron Murphy, y'all are our captains. Y'all going to show them what's up from before the snap and then all the way through four quarters. And I think that's what's so unique about this Texas team is they've been able to really take whatever anybody has said and said, all right, I hear you. I got you. Come watch us this upcoming week and see what we do. And that's what's made it special because they're adaptable and they mold to any situation. Steve Sarkisian has been on point with keeping them focused for whatever the task is up at hand. They've been able to answer the bell. And I got them winning 34-20 against Texas Tech. And I think they do it in a dramatic fashion where they just letting it all hang out, right? Last home game, it's senior night. Everybody playing that last time in DKR going to show up and show out. And I think they bring it to Tech. Not to mention the comments that Brett Yormark had before the season started. Not to mention – We saw what happened whenever there was bulletin board material last week from Jared Huffman as well. Brett Yormark.
Yormark was sitting right behind me in the press box, Posse.
Oh, yeah. So there's some additional motivation by this Texas team about the comments that Yormark had, and Sark handled it gracefully with his comments in response to that. But just know, deep down inside, they got something to prove, and they on a mission right now, and I think they'll continue to prove that mission as they – look to close out the regular season Big 12 play.
Yeah. Well, before we wind down, I want to get your comments on CJ Baxter, you know, the true freshman out of Orlando. Like you said, he started the season ahead of JB, had some injuries and played well, you know, 20 carries, 117 yards. What did CJ Baxter show you? And what do you feel like his upside is?
Yeah, that's one of the best performances all season long. And I got to give credit to Iowa State's defense. John Haycock, the defense coordinator, has been an absolute beast for that defense at Iowa State. And they've always been very good at defense in general. But one of the things that they've always prided themselves on is stopping the run and minimizing big gains like explosives. It just doesn't happen against Iowa State. Seeing the way that Cedric Baxter came down, was getting chunk yardage, 21 yards, 11 yards, 8 yards, 7 yards, 6 yards. Like the offense was in sync because of the way that the offensive line and CJ Baxter were able to stay in coordination and in sync with keeping them ahead of the chains. And that's where Texas has struggled in the past was if they weren't running the ball very well, they get behind the chains and then they get into these third and long situations where – okay, now defenses are pinning their ears back, or they're dropping 8, and then it makes it a lot more difficult to be able to find an open receiver past the yardage to gain. So seeing how CJ Baxter, man, took on that challenge, right? It's a huge challenge. Same way with Malik Murphy, and I think his production goes unnoticed as well. Like this Texas team, I talked about adaptability not too long ago, but this Texas team was without their all-star QB for 2 games, and Malik Murphy did what? Just came in and played against one of the best teams in the conference and beat them 33-30, and then also did his thing against BYU. But then you also lost your all-star running back, and what does the backup do in that situation? C.J. Baxter, he just comes in and goes for 117 yards against one of the best defensive coordinators historically within the Big 12 conference. So this team, they do it all and they rally around each other. And I think C.J. Baxter is another shining example of a guy stepping up in a perfect opportunity whenever the spotlight's on him. He makes plays and has a big time performance that helps lead them to another victory and a 10-point win in a hard fought game against a hard fought Iowa State team on the road in Ames, Iowa. So I think CJ Baxter's just scratching the surface. I also believe early on he had to learn how to run behind his pads and continue to learn how to break arm tackles. And some of those would be tacklers that Jonathan Brooks was breaking every single time he touched a rock in the same way that Bijan and Roshan was able to do last year. C.J. Baxter just needed a little bit more of that experience and those reps to be able to add on to his game. And I think he did a phenomenal job of expanding his game and showcasing his abilities as to why he was one of the top-ranked running backs last year and why he's being viewed as a starter, prototypical-type running back for this Texas Longhorn team.
Got to ask you. I'm seeing a big Tavondre Sweat up front. He's a problem for people. And I'm seeing Casey Hampton, some Sean Rogers. I'm seeing that kind of stuff from 93. And the whole Longhorn Nation held their breath when he was face down on that turf.
Mm-hmm.
He took a knee to the head and he got back up and went back to being a problem. That's a first round NFL pick. And is there anyone that he reminds you of in that middle as a disruptor? Because they haven't had a guy like him in a long, long time.
Yeah, his skill set doesn't necessarily translate the exact same way as this guy. But we were talking about Jalen Carter, right? And you look at Georgia a couple of years ago, this dude was a guy that was an absolute menace on the defensive line. His size was something that was talked about. His athleticism was something that was talked about. His pass rushing capabilities was something that was talked about. He almost made a phenomenal play this past week. I don't know if y'all saw it, where he almost picked off the spike. He got those types of wits about himself. But I feel like Tavondre Sweat can have a similar type of impact. And Griffin, B-Rod, we all were talking about this in the game last week while we were watching and just taking notes of how well of a system he could be a plug-and-play guy, mm-hmm. right? Any of the 32 teams in the NFL right now could take a Tavondre Sweat and say, hey, you go be our guy right here. Hold it down. And Tavondre Sweat could absolutely do that on 32 mm-hmm. teams in the NFL right now. And I think that's why his skill set translates to success that can be had right now, obviously, as we're seeing at the collegiate level, but then also professionally as a first-round draft pick in my mind as well, with the talent he's been able to put together, the type of season he's been able to put together, and then the impact that he provides. Not only is he doing it on the defensive side of the ball, but let's not forget he blocked an extra point too, which helped swing the momentum back for Texas to be able to take the surge and put on more points there. So this dude's been able to do it on the defensive side and now the special teams side. That just makes his value and his price go up in the next NFL draft.
He'll be his agent.
Right.
He'll be his agent.
Duck, I know you got a million questions, but
of course
I heard through the grapevine before we get out of here that Fozzie Whitaker isn't just a football analyst. He's doing other stuff. He said he apologized for being a little late. Why were you late, Fozzie? And tell us what you got going in our city.
Yeah, man. I opened up a gym with my wife. We are franchise partners of Burn Boot Camp, which is a franchise that started in Charlotte, North Carolina, Huntersville, to be particular. And it actually began whenever my wife and I lived in Carolina while I was playing with the Panthers. She was looking for a spot to work out. And it's funny because her and her friend, one of my teammates' wife as well, they were like, hey, let's go try this place. We live 1 mile, like literally exactly 1 mile from the nearest location. And where we lived at, they was like, we'll just jog and use that as our kind of warm up to get to the gym. We'll jog there and then we'll go work out. And there was a super sale that Burn Boot Camp in Charlotte was having, and they both jumped on it. They was like, perfect, we'll try it out for a month, we'll quit, and then all of a sudden we'll go find another gym, because it was like a dollar for 30 days. It was something ridiculous. It was like, bet, we'll do it. Or maybe it was 30 days for $30, so a dollar per day. It was like, bet, we'll do it. And then after that 30 days is up, we'll go find out another place. And after that 30 days, my wife was absolutely in love. She said, there's no way I'm leaving. So she signs up for a long-term membership. And it's cool because they allow universal memberships to be their thing. So there are over 300 burn locations across the country. Whenever you're traveling to whatever city that you're going to, you can look up the nearest burn and you can go and work out there and not miss a beat in your kind of workout regimen. And so the funny thing about it was, whenever I would come back to Austin in the off season, obviously she was traveling with me as well, there wasn't a burn around us. We would have to travel about 30 minutes to be able to get to a burn. And my wife was like, hey, I need to have this same type of information, like right around me. And I got to have this impact for me. So what she was able to do, she talked me into opening up a burn, and we got a burn boot camp in Cedar Park. And man, we're going on year two of being open, and it's been one of the most amazing experiences of my life being an entrepreneur.
That is awesome, man.
It's online, man. Burn Boot Camp. It's Fozzie Williams. Yeah. Right. Go work out.
Burn Boot Camp, Cedar Park, 205 Cedar Park Drive.
Thank man, you, we appreciate Fozzie. It, Fozzie. We'll see you at the game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I appreciate it, man. Thank y'all for having me on.
Happy holiday.
On Second Thought.
How good is Fozzie Whitaker, Duck? I mean, slumming with us, and he obviously should be working in Bristol. He's got that. He's talked about the it factor. Hell, Fozzie Whitaker's got that it factor in our business. He does.
He's a Longhorn Network graduate who is going on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, and you know, Robert Griffin III's pretty funny. I mean, he was sprinting with Dabo Swinney to the sideline the other day. He's kind of found his niche on ESPN, and he's a personality. And I think Fozzie's that kind of personality. Boy, Texas is pumping them out. The Ocho Boys and Fozzie. And remember our dearly departed Lance Blanks was very good at his job in broadcast. Yeah. So
Michael Griffin
and B. Rob are really, really good. Yeah. So, yeah, it's fun to see him grow up in communications after having such a good run at football. Speaking of running, Duck, Josh Brooks might be a problem for this much ballyhooed Texas run defense. And I think if he doesn't play well, though, I think the Red Raiders are going to get run out of DKR.
Yeah, he too, and he might play well or play up to his ability and still not have a good game, because, you know, Texas is fifth in the nation run defense. Fifth. I mean, that's pretty impressive. They've held five teams below 1.9 per carry.
Wow.
And seven teams below 96 rushing yards. You do that and you make them throw if they want to do anything to move the chains. You've accomplished a hell of a lot. So I think that's above and far away, you know, the biggest key to this game is not letting him go off. He's got 800 yard games and a 98 yard game against Kansas State. So he's a player, and he's going to have to get their entire focus, but usually does from this Texas front line.
You know what? The case could be made if Blake Corum wasn't on the planet Earth, that the two best running backs in the country are in the Big 12.
Absolutely.
Or the three best. You got Ollie from Oklahoma State. You got JB from Texas. And you got Ollie Brooks. I mean, you won't find another conference with three accomplished running backs like that.
Leaving out Imani Bailey at TCU. He's top 10.
Really good. He's really
top 10 in the nation.
It's almost like the old days when running backs were running the show.
I know. How about that? Hey, I'm chairman of the All-American committee. I was pushing Jay Brooks to be All-American, but, you know, something about getting hurt, missing a couple games. But I go, hey, Brock Bowers, you know, has missed a game or two, and he's going to be our All-American tight end, obviously. But I think
JB had missed the first two games of the season and played the last nine, he'd be an All-American.
Yeah, he would be. But, I think, like you say, Taj Brooks, Ollie Gordon, they're as good as it gets. So that's going to be a big, big focus on Friday night.
And Doug, you mentioned this is big time. I mean, if you haven't been on the planet, the game's at 6:30 p.m. on Saturday at Royal Memorial Stadium. Friday, I'm sorry. Did I say Saturday? Yeah. I'm a creature of habit. 6:30 p.m. Friday, Black Friday, DKR. Texas ruined Texas's season before. They've done it. My first year on the beat, they beat Texas in 2002. Wes Welker, Cliff Kingsbury, 42-38 over a talented Texas team that had NFL guys all over, you know, Derek Johnson, Roy Williams, Chris Sims, Seb Benson, all on that team. And then 08, the Michael Crabtree, Graham Harrell game, Duck. Before we get out of here, I wasn't there. Could you conjure up what was going through your mind as the number one team in the country, Texas, lost in the final 5 seconds of that game in Lubbock?
You know, Texas, you know, did everything right but finish. You know, they couldn't just put the wraps on that game. And even before the Crabtree catch, you know, Blake Gideon, the safety, who started every game since he was a freshman, you know, I don't know what it was, 50 starts, whatever it was, and now he's the safeties coach for Steve Sarkisian. He dropped an interception right before the Crabtree catch that would have sealed the game. And then even that one, the one to Michael Crabtree, who had a pretty good NFL career, they had him on the sideline. Curtis Brown couldn't make the tackle. And Earl Thomas, we all know how good Earl Thomas was.
Two NFL guys.
Just kind of ran up there and didn't, you know, could have pushed him out of bounds or something. So, and then right before that, you know, Texas had scored and Colt McCoy ran out of bounds, stopped the clock, which Texas Tech needed every second on that clock. We asked Colt about that after the game, and he said, man, I was tired of getting hit, you know, and you couldn't blame him because it was such a physical game. But, you know, if he would have gone down inbounds, they'd have run some more time off the clock. So it just almost seemed like fate said, and you and I both agree that was Mac's second best team.
No question.
In 08.
No question.
04, damn good, beat Michigan in the Rose Bowl. 09, they probably would have beaten Alabama, but that 08 team was special.
They were ready to get after Tebow. And the great Colt McCoy himself said 08 team was better than the 09 team.
Yeah.
And that's good enough for me.
It was just dominant. So, you know, and then I don't know if you remember when Sam Ehlinger threw the interception across the middle late in the game. And
yes.
Had like a 75-yard run back, and that Tech win saved Cliff Kingsbury's job. You know, so it's an interesting rivalry. It's not a great rivalry in terms of Longhorn fans because they don't put much stock into it. But it's always, you know, OU and A&M are the top two, and it was always Arkansas when they were in the Southwest Conference. But that other third rivalry is kind of rotated between SMU when they had the Pony Express and in Houston when Andre Ware was winning the Heisman there. And the run and shoot offense, even Baylor and TCU from time to time, but the stakes are just so big. It just seems like, you know, we don't know if they're going to make the CFP. They're probably a long shot, quite honestly.
I think so. That's the
have some help,
and it might not be, and it's probably not fair that they're a long shot because they beat Alabama by 10, and they've beaten ranked teams in Oregon. Oregon hasn't beaten anyone of consequence just yet.
They beat Tech.
Yeah, and Tech gave them a game.
38-30.
Yeah, and Tech was up in that game, and they also gave away the game to Washington. Had they beaten Washington, then you know, Texas is in trouble. But I fear that if Ohio State loses to Michigan, that's going to hurt Texas. And I think if Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC title game, that may kill Texas. And that might not, and that's probably not fair because Texas has beaten everybody putting in front of it except for Oklahoma. And you know, if they don't get in, that Oklahoma loss is gonna play in the minds of Longhorn Nation for the rest of their days, because that was their chance. And Duck, I wrote this week, we have to keep it real on this podcast. Duck, they're going to be in the SEC next year. This is their best opportunity to make some noise on a national level, because they're going to be dealing with Alabama, LSU, and Georgia for the foreseeable future. So right now, they don't have to deal with them until they maybe make a CFP or play them in a bowl game. But this is as good as it's going to get right now. A great opportunity for Sarkisian and company to make history.
But you got to remember, Alabama and Georgia got to deal with Texas and Oklahoma.
They do. They do.
It works both ways. But Alabama, you're right.
I think Alabama.
This opportunity is right there.
I think Alabama's CFP upside is bigger. And they're going to have to deal. Texas already beat Alabama. Texas is going to beat Alabama again in the future. And Alabama's going to beat Texas. That's what happens when great teams play each other. Sarkisian has this program on an upward arc. And the recruiting is great. And the talent he's bringing in is great. They're not afraid of anyone in the SEC. And last I checked, the last time they played Georgia, they beat them. So Texas is not going to go in there all cowardly and scary. But the problem is the minefield is a lot bigger in the SEC, because you got national championship programs that are in your league. Right now, there's only one in the Big 12 besides Texas, and that's OU. And Texas has a chance to do it this year, and then next year. I think we agree that it's going to be a lot tougher to get back.
Yeah, well, because you'll be playing tough teams every week. And you could make the case that Texas should be 2-0 against Alabama the last 2 years.
Yeah. Oh, should have beat them here. Should have beat them here. Ryan Watts doesn't come in too hot. Then what are the conversations about now? Yeah. Then Texas comes into the season ranked higher than they are. So, you know, we don't, you know, like Sark says, we don't really deal in hypotheticals that much, but they figured out how to win those kind of games this season. And that's why they're in this position, Doug.
They got a great opportunity. And at worst, you figure they got a chance to go 13-1. If they beat Tech Friday night, they win the Big 12, they win a New Year's Six Bowl, probably the Cotton or the Fiesta. Maybe
we'll take either one.
Maybe against Ohio State, you know, you never know. They could go 13-1, so they would be leaving the Big 12 and going into the SEC on a high. So it's just been a wonderful season, and you got to take your hat off to Sark. I mean, they were sitting there 13-12, and nobody was sure he's going to get it done. And now, you know, a year later, what is he now, 23-13? Looks a whole lot better to be plus 10. And I think they're going to blow out Tech too. I got them winning 48-17. I'm not sure why, but I just figured
you're a homer. That's why.
Yeah, I'm well known.
You're a homer.
It's very well acknowledged.
Finally, folks. Finally, our Heisman votes is coming up, and you're going to vote for Quinn Ewers, or you're going to have to turn in your ballot. You're going to have to send your vote if you don't vote for Quinn Ewers. You owe it to Longhorn Nation, Bowles. You owe it.
No, I'm voting for Tavondre Sweat.
You'll get no argument out of me. He might be the
best player on the team, right?
He might be the best player in the country. I am not kidding. I am not kidding about that.
And it's so weird, Sid. You look at the stat line against Iowa State, he had one tackle. And there's never been anybody, maybe in the history of college football, that has had one tackle in a game and had more impact on that game, because he was a factor every play when he was in there. And
fingerprint literally all over that field, including football, where he changed the momentum with that deflection. Just a mammoth human being and a massive, massive problem for opposing offensive lines. I'm telling you, I don't know that Quinn Ewers keeps D coordinators up at night, but I know offensive line coaches are wondering, oh my God, how are we going to handle Sweat and Murphy and Collins and Broughton? They have a four-headed monster in the middle that is just running rampant through this conference, and it's fun to watch. It is really fun to watch.
It's a little bit easier when offensive line don't have to worry about being called for holding. you know, that helps their chances a little bit.
What are you trying to say, Doc?
I'm trying to say have a happy Thanksgiving and safe, all of you people out there. And you said, and we will see you at DKR on Friday night.
That's how you close down a podcast. Many thanks to Fozzie Whitaker, our good friend and friend of the podcast. Thanks to Chandler Hoffley, who does such a good job making this thing go every week. We appreciate him so much. And, you know, to everybody out there, enjoy your Thanksgiving. Thanks for listening to us in between bites of turkey. We're going to go eat some more because we are extremely not hungry, but extremely gluttonous.
That's what we do.
So thanks for joining us. That'll do it for episode 317. Horns, Red Raiders, 3:30 p.m. tomorrow. For the Duck, I'm Seth Golden. Happy holidays.
See you, everybody.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.